Blog Talk Radio.
Center on the Unknown Show, Matt Beeson, the recently released short story collection, Happy Rock. And we'll talk to Brian Dawson, a poet who's just returning from the Beast Crawl in the San Francisco area. Thanks for listening. A lot going on over here. Last night, me and my wife went up to Yankee Stadium. First time I've ever been to the new Yankee Stadium or the old Yankee Stadium, and it was kind of cool getting out and seeing that side of New York, uptown, and actually going to a baseball game for first time in a long, long time. And we were out probably till about, I don't know, 12:30 in the morning, and got up and went to work today, but day's over, man. But I was happy to see today the new Zygote My Coffee came out, which is a really great online zine put out by Brian Fugit. And I wanted to start the show off with reading a few things plucked out of the magazine here that I thought were really worth people checking out. First, I want to start off with a little piece of writing here. This is called Easter Trash. This is by Misty Rainwater Lights. It's first person from the point of view of a girl, so, you know, whatever. All right, so this is called Easter Trash. This is by Misty Rainwater Lights. I was on the rag, and I was horny as fucking hell, but I was tired of sharing Aaron with his wife. I wanted him all to myself. He parked his truck in the usual spot by the pond. Ducks were swimming and quacking, and assholes were jogging and panting. Aaron lit a joint, took a hit, then passed it to me. A Celine Dion song was on the radio. I changed the station until I found Led Zeppelin. It was good shit. I held the smoke in my lungs and watched the neon lights dance on the water. I could smell the burgers and fries at Whataburger. My stomach growled, but I was living on celery, tuna, and water because Aaron had made a comment about my beer belly a couple of weeks ago. He put his fingers in my hair. He loved my long hair. I felt like shaving my head to see how he would react. "Hey, beautiful, what's wrong?" he asked. "I'm really fucking horny," I said. "Nothing wrong with that. Come here, I'm lonely." I scooted closer to him. He grabbed my hair with both hands and kissed me hard. I could feel the warm blood oozing from my cunt. I wanted to pull up my dress and straddle him and get my blood all over his dick. Instead, I pulled away from him and took another toke. Great shit. I reached inside my purse and pulled out my silver flask. The vodka blurred my nerves. Weed and vodka. The ultimate American combo meal. "Jack Daniels?" he asked. "Nope. Bottom shelf vodka, baby. Lucid Angel, it's called." "How poetic," he said. "Is there anything you want to tell me? Is there someone else?" "Damn straight there's someone else," I said. "Your wife. How was her meatloaf tonight?" "Come on, Amy. I thought we were past that. You know how things are with my marriage. It's complicated. I don't love her, though. Not like I love you. You love me with your hands, your mouth, and your dick. Sometimes. Not as often as I would like, and I wish your brain was more involved." "My brain? My brain is all over you. I think about you all the time. I crave you. What more do you want? You know this is all I can give you right now. I've asked you to be patient." "I'm on the rag," I said. "I don't want to get my blood all over you." "Shit, when will it be over?" "2 or 3 days." "Fuck. I want you so bad," he said. "Look, don't be pissed, but we're going to Las Vegas this weekend." "I'm sorry. She booked the trip months ago. It's our anniversary." Wow, congratulations, I said. How many years? 9. Feels more like 20. When I'm with her, I'm thinking about you. Aw, how sweet. Are you giving her diamond earrings? Don't be a bitch, she said. I'm going now. I'll drive you home, he said. No, I'll walk. Baby, don't leave like this. I let him kiss me, but I wasn't lost in the kiss. My eyes were open. An Aerosmith song was playing on the radio. The anguish of the song always gets me. It seems true. I'm sure Steven Tyler felt the anguish to his marrow at the time. What does it take to let someone go? If I knew the answer to that one, I wouldn't be shivering by a goddamn duck pond the night after Easter, watching my married boyfriend speed away in his truck while my stomach growls and my pussy sobs. As I walked towards the dump I share with 2 roommates and 5 cats, I kicked the Easter trash with my cowboy boots. Busted bunny pinatas and cracked cascarones. Someone had a party. That's Misty Green, one of the lights. I always get a kick out of her stuff. She's such a great writer. She's got a book coming out real soon from Epic Rage Press called Bullshit Rodeo. And I was lucky enough to read that before it was a different version of it. You know, I believe Epic Rights did, you know, some editing on it, and a different version is going to be coming out. But I was happy enough to read that one last summer, and I'm forward to seeing it in its new form when it comes around. So first on the show, I'm going to pull on Matthew Simmons. He's the author of the book Happy Rock and quite a few other titles, and he's calling in from Seattle, Washington right now, I believe. Matthew, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
How you doing, man? What's up?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, you know. Just hanging in here. Just, getting going. So,
yeah.
So what's going on with your night? Are you calling in from – are you in Seattle right now?
I am in Seattle right now, yeah. I'm actually at work still. I'm working for another couple hours, but I took a late lunch so I could call in. I'm sitting in a conference room, empty conference room. So
that's awesome. Yeah, your feet up on the conference table. And
on the table.
Behind your head. And
exactly.
Are you on like a Bluetooth? Do you have like a Bluetooth headset in your ear?
No, sadly. Sadly not that professional.
Right. So I want to talk to you about your newest book that just came out, Happy Rock. Can you tell everybody a little bit about that?
Happy Rock is a book of short stories that I've been working on for, I mean, the earliest little seeds of some of the stories are 10 years old. But they're all stories about Upper Michigan, where my folks and I lived when I was a teenager. So... it's just this grouping of short stories that are all set sort of in the same small towns. Sometime a couple of years ago, 3 years ago or something like that, I started looking at all the stories I'd written and realized that a bunch of them were all set in the same place, and I thought I'd put them all together in a collection. So
that's really cool when things can be linked by location. Do you find, like, unfortunately, I haven't read your book yet. I'm not a very good reader these days, to be honest with you. I haven't really been doing much reading fucking Swamplandia. Yeah. I've been reading that for like, feels like a year.
Right.
Just a bunch of...
Does that happen with you sometimes? Were you... Sorry.
Where I don't read very often? Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
I get in these funks where I'm writing and I'm not reading. Or I work construction, so where I work, it's very hard to have a quiet place to sit down and read and enjoy anything. I have to read it on my phone, and my phone is currently smashed. You should see the screen, man.
I got through the same thing where I'll have periods where I can't seem to read very much. I think I've kind of gotten into last few months. I've started up again where I've been reading a lot more. But I'll have like 2 or 3 months where I can't even finish. I'll still finish like a book or two, but
Yeah.
Where I, like, I'll go through periods where I can read a ton, like 2 books a week or something like that, and then it'll all fall apart for a while, and just can't find myself back into it. I think I actually write more when I'm reading more, though. So this is actually a good sign, because I've been writing less for the last, I don't know, year and a half or something. So I feel like with the reading ramping up, maybe the writing will too. Hopefully.
Yeah, I definitely see how that happens, how the two things can kind of go together sometimes. So apart from the location, tying a lot of these stories in Happy Rock together, is there like a, I know it's such a hard question, especially with collections of short stories, do you find like kind of themes that kind of keep popping up in the stories connecting them, or is it just like a loose bag?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about like the people I like, the people I kind of write about, the description of the book, someone called a lot of people misfits, and I think I write about a lot of people who are sort of outsiders, and I think that's just, you know, I think writers are interested in outsiders because writers tend to be quiet, and they tend to be watchers, and they tend to be, you know, they tend to be more, observational, they tend to observe. So I think that that's something that maybe is a theme, is that I'm interested in weirdos.
Yeah, weirdos.
And people with strange opinions that have reached them in strange ways, and you know, people who don't think we ever landed on the moon. I like those people a lot.
Do you think we landed on the moon?
Probably. Yeah, probably. Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Like last week.
But I like people who lacking other outlets for their imagination, come up with elaborate, weird, hidden stories, or find connections and things that maybe there aren't connections in and stuff like that. I like people like that. And I like, I think another thing about Happy Rock is, because I spent a lot of time in small towns trying to get out of small towns, there's a lot of people either being stuck or trying to get away. Is another thing that kind of runs through the book here and there. People longing to not be wherever they are. But then you leave and then you realize you don't want to be where you are too, so.
Yeah, the problem, it seems like the problem a lot of times is not where you are, it's your own your own happiness, which is funny. Funny, the book is called Happy Rock. That's such like a such a funny description of that whole thing. Like you're Happy Rock, you know.
There are a few different reasons why I like that. Why I liked the title. I mean, the main one is the town I lived in Upper Michigan is called Gladstone, and people would call it Happy Rock. And usually they were saying it with some level of irony.
It's like a draft place. When I think of Michigan, instantly I think of Michael Moore's documentary, Michael and Me.
Right.
Of course, you know, just draft.
Yeah. We were up in Upper Michigan. Upper Michigan doesn't really feel like Michigan. It's just it doesn't feel like anything except Upper Michigan. It hangs off of Wisconsin as opposed to Michigan. And you know, I remember when we first moved up there. Occasionally, you'd see. I remember at least one guy who had a pickup truck, an old guy in a pickup truck that had been, he'd written all over, you know, he had his manifesto written all over it. There was a small movement of people trying to break Upper Michigan off from Michigan to be its own state, and they wanted to call it Superior. I remember that guy driving around in his Superior pickup and being interested in him.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever stopped him and talked to him, but... Upper Michigan doesn't feel like Michigan. It feels like nothing but Upper Michigan.
Yeah.
They didn't have the same, the economy up there is mostly, there's a paper mill next to my house, timber and stuff like that.
They're open still, this paper mill?
I think that mill is still there. It was a mead plant, so, you know, it's a pretty big paper corporation, but you know, like a paper mills, a meat plants smell like rotten eggs.
Oh yeah.
Because of the process, so it smells like garbage every once in a while, just right next to my house.
Oh yeah, it's great. Well, I grew up in Jersey, and if you ever been to New Jersey, Meadowlands, just a big marsh, and definitely known for its fucking reeking smells. But I've actually worked in a couple of paper mills throughout the years, welding and repairing the fucking tubes that the water goes through. And the thing with where I'm from, which reminds me of the story you just said about the guy driving all around with his truck with all shit written on it. The town where I'm from in Jersey, there was this woman. I won't say her name. I don't want to, you know. She's like a local celebrity for being an outcast and a weirdo. Because she was she was in the 60s, late 60s. She was in like a few magazines, like muscle magazines and stuff, as like a model. And she's just plastered her whole car with vintage photos of herself. Now she's an old woman. And she just drives around and basically, like, her whole car is like a shrine to her youth. And she, it's such a weird thing to latch on to, you know?
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's great. I'm gonna find some photos. I'm going to find some photos of her car. It's pretty famous in the town, Tom's River. I'm gonna look online, and I'm gonna post some pictures on the Facebook site for the Unknown Show, and you guys can see what I'm talking about if I find them. If not, I'll just snap some pictures next time I go down to the beach. But you know, another thing that
cars are another thing I like. Sorry.
Oh yeah, our cars, man. That's the shit right there.
I lived in New York for a little while.
Another thing that popped in my mind with Happy Rock. This thought of like happy rock music, just like this strange type of poppy rock music.
Just
not really, probably has nothing to do in itself. It almost sounds like an ironic title for the opposite.
I think the only bands that ever come up in. There's a story in the collection that has a kid who spends a lot of time listening to Bauhaus, which is kind of Smith, which is very, very not happy rock.
Not happy at all.
No. Yeah. There's not like a lot of who's the best happy rock band? Maybe the Buzzcocks or something like that. Like some of the better pop punk stuff from the early days. I think there was a lot more kind of depressive indie punk and doomy metal music that inspired happy rock than actual happy rock.
It came out months ago. Was this came from Dark Coast? Was that the year? Yes, Dark Coast.
Yeah, Dark Coast Press. The press here in Seattle.
That's great. And where's the best place people can pick your book up that aren't in Seattle? Is it just like an Amazon thing, or is it?
Yeah, I mean you can. It's the Dark Coast Press has a national distribution.
Sure.
So you can get it in any local bookstore. And I work here in a large independent bookstore in Seattle. So I'm always happy when people buy books at actual physical bookstores. If you can't. I understand that as well, but it should any bookstore should be able to actually order a copy in. It's distributed through Ingram, which is national, so it's out there. It can be
I'm living in New York City uptown, and the thought of a bookstore anywhere in my proximity is just such a far flung thing. It seems like such a fantasy. That I would actually have a bookstore in my neighborhood, and it's just fucking, it's been horrible. There was one here for a little while, Usher and Heights, and of course they had to close. And now when I want a book, I got to go all the way down to the Village of Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's an unhealthy industry. The brick and mortar bookstore is not in the best shape, and we need all the support we can get.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
But I love it. I love bookstores. So I mean.
Oh, me too.
Makes me sad.
I used to think I was going to be able to pick up chicks in bookstores when I was younger. And I was like, when I was like, you know, 11 and 12, I wouldn't go to the mall and like walk around and like, you know, talk to girls at the fountain or, you know, throwing pennies in or anything. I would go to like the local bookstore and just walk around the aisles and this is how I got into reading. But never been any girls.
Was there a section in particular you like to you know, cruise through for ladies? Was there
just is there a
particular
fiction
shelf?
General
fiction,
general literary fiction, you know. I figured, you know, maybe hang around the Vonnegut section, meet the weirdos, you know.
It seems like a good plan to me.
Oh yeah, it didn't work. I met more girls in flea markets, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Heaps of junk. So you have a few other books out. You have one out called A Yellow Horse, and another one called The Moon Tonight Feels My Revenge. Are they? Let's start with it. Can you tell everybody what Yellow Horse is about?
Yellow Horse is a novella that I wrote.
Okay.
And it's a single story about a road trip to a,
uh-huh,
to a funeral. And I wrote that in 2007. It was published in 2009 through Publishing Genius Press, a great little press in Baltimore.
Cool.
And it's like a lot of the writing I do is sort of surreal, or there are moments of surreality that mix into the general reality of the story. So
yeah, like it's a plausible dream.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I had that book sitting around for a while, and I eventually sent it to Publishing Genius Press, and they liked it enough to put it out. That was kind of my first print. Like, that was my first book, basically. I'd been in little print journals and things, but that was the first big thing for me.
That's great. And you had another one called The Moon Tonight Feels My Revenge from Keyhole. What was the overall premise of that?
And The Moon Tonight Feels My Revenge is a collection of three short stories with a bunch of little pieces in between the stories that are about one-man black metal bands.
Mm-hmm.
And the title itself is the first line of a song by... he's in San Francisco. A guy named who goes by the name Malefic, and has a band called Dastur. It was the first line of one of the songs. I think it's the name of Soul Abduction Ceremony, and I really like that line. So
yeah, it's great.
Decided to do the title of a book, and those stories are the three long stories that are in it. Again, have sort of misfit characters who have weird ways of looking at the world, and they all kind of felt somehow connected to the sort of extreme edge of misanthropic black metal, especially the guys who have so much trouble with other people that they can't even be in a band with anyone else, so they have to learn to play all their own instruments and be their own bands.
Yeah. Do you have a lot of experience? Did you ever have musical experiences yourself? Are you a musician by any means?
Never anything serious. I was in like weird noise bands in college and stuff, but I was never good at anything. I mean, I have a guitar somewhere around. I think I still know how to play, you know, three or four chords, and I can tune everything to one chord and make noise that way. I think that's basically all I ever used to do.
My big trick at parties used to be, not like a big party, but there's just, you know, there's always like a guitar sitting around, and it's always horrible too when somebody picks that fucking thing up and starts playing it at a party. But you know, when you used to have regular landline telephones, a dial tone used to be an F. Nowadays, I don't know, is there dial toning? Does that still exist? And it picks the sound effects you can play on your computer.
Right.
So you could pick it up and you could tune the guitar by the dial tone, and that always seemed to really amaze people. And there you go, that was my one trick.
So you tune it so it's thing.
Where would you tune? I have no idea how one would do that. That is a good question.
How you do it?
Yeah. How does one tune against the dial tone?
You just put your finger on the first fret of the E string, and you pluck the E string, and you listen on the phone, and you tune the string while it's still vibrating with your finger on the first fret until the sounds match up. And then that's simple. That's a simple way, you know.
And then you can do the harmonics for the rest of the notes.
Yeah, the crowd went wild.
Okay. All right, well, maybe next time I go to a party, I'll try that.
It's too late. Missed your opportunity. So what's happening with, have you been doing a lot of readings for Happy Rock?
Just a couple so far. I did a book launch here in Seattle on May 28th, which is also my my birthday. I turned 40 that day.
Oh, happy birthday, man.
Thank you. And my folks were actually in town. They had flown in there, so they got to see me read in front of a small group of people who applauded politely, and it was nice. But I've done that, and I've done a couple little readings here and there, and I'm going to do a small West Coast tour. I have to be in Santa Barbara in early August for a family thing. So I'm turning my journey down to Santa Barbara into a book tour. Like three stops, just Portland, LA, and San Francisco, LA. So.
Oh, that's great. That sounds really awesome.
I managed to give myself an extra day where I can drive from San Francisco to LA, and I'm hoping to hit the coast and stop at. I just wanted to see the Winchester. You know about the Winchester Mystery House? Are you familiar with this?
No, I never heard of it. What's the Winchester Mystery House?
So I guess it's one of the heirs to the Winchester fortune, Winchester rifles. A member of the Winchester family was convinced somehow that as long as there was construction going on in her house, it kept evil spirits away. I guess this is the story. I mean, somebody at least told me this, and maybe they were wrong. So she always had people working on things in her house, and there are stairways that go nowhere, and there are doors that don't go anywhere. I guess it's just a crazy house full of all these jutting pieces of architecture. So I'm hoping to stop by that and take a look at it. I've never actually seen it. I like roadside attractions. That's a big part of a Jell-O course, too, or roadside attractions in Kansas and Nebraska. So
I'm wondering if, I know you're on your break right now, would you be able to read anything? Are you able to give us a story?
I've got one that it's called Content, and it's a story in the form of a list, and it seems to work pretty well for short readings, so I thought I would read that. So, Contents. Contents of a Bedroom Nightstand, January 6, 8 a.m., Gladstone, Michigan. Pill bottle, sertraline, 6 left. Pill bottle, alprazolam, empty. Pen, blue ink, 3/4 full. Pen, black ink, almost empty. Notebook, 9.5 by 6 inches, 80 sheets, 9 removed, college ruled, 3/4 full, mostly drawings, non sequiturs, 3 dated entries. Box of condoms, 4 left, 5 empty wrappers, tucked back in the box. Small flashlight, AA batteries, 2. Contents of a wallet, March 7th, 6 p.m., Escanaba, Michigan. $16.50, 2 fives, 6 singles, and another $1 bill torn in half. Its mate in a wallet in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Subway card, 5 punches, MasterCard, credit, debit card. Wallet-sized photo of a girl inscribed XOXO Lori. Public library card, significantly faded signature. Their house key, book of stamps, 2 left, business card, mental health counselor. Contents of an envelope, April 6, 3 p.m., Gladstone, Michigan, $400 in cash, one note, 9.5 by 6 inches, blue ink, mostly apologies, resigned tone. Contents of a uterus, May 19, 5 p.m., Marquette, Michigan, traces of old blood, amniotic fluid, and cervical mucus, strings of fetal tissue and muscle from the uterine wall, bits of placenta. Contents of the interior pocket of a denim jacket, June 3, noon, Gladstone, Michigan, pack of spearmint chewing gum, two pieces left, cigarette lighter, green plastic, half empty, plastic baggie, marijuana, $6 or so left, mostly shake, seeds, and dry, crumbling bud, black grass, one hitter, note from an ex-girlfriend, lined college-ruled notebook paper, blue ink, faded, insincere tone, mildly insulting assumptions, confusing meaning. Plastic glasses, green plaid pattern, cat's eye shape. Contents of the woods behind a house, June 3, 7 p.m., Gladstone, Michigan. Trees, mostly jack pines, 13.5 squirrels, three young counted as half. Fort made of flat, uneven plywood sheets, innumerable acorns, a couple thousand square feet of moss, 38 birds, more moments earlier, 24 hidden pornographic magazines in an elementary school student's stash, under a sheet in the fort wrapped in a plastic bag, 427 cigarette butts, bullet casing from a .30-30 Winchester, skeletons of five cats, two buried under headstones, male, age 17, stoned, bleeding from the abdomen, one rare lady slipper, purple flute, white petals, contents of a shot glass, June 8, 1 a.m., Escanaba, Michigan, half a fluid ounce of rye whiskey, impression of a bottom lip, cherry red lipstick, recently applied. So that's contents.
Wow, that's crazy. That's really awesome. I love the part when you said the name of the town in Michigan, Gladstone, Michigan. I was like, oh, Happy Rock. I'm fucking in on
it,
man. I know what's going on now. And I love that part. It was like 1,000 square feet of moss. Was that
yeah,
the line?
Yeah.
Something close to that?
It is, yeah, it's a couple thousand square feet of moss, yeah.
That's great stuff. That's a little piece out of Happy Rock, or is that just a coincidence?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah, that's out of Happy Rock, yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to that, man. I want to read that. I'm going to read that book, and it's going to be, I'm going to turn over a new leaf, man. I'm going to start reading. How's that? Imagine that, a fucking writer who reads. It was really great.
Okay, I don't think it's uncommon to have. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I know it's probably not too uncommon to not, if you're going to write, to not be too great in reading. But what are you going to do?
I know some writers who don't read when they're writing, or who try to find. I know prose writers who only read poetry when they write prose, because they're afraid of letting somebody else's prose take over their voice and stuff like that. So they instead try to find something that inspires them. And poetry can inspire you in ways that prose doesn't, you know, or can change the way you write your own prose. So
that's a pretty good tip right there. So thanks for setting aside some time. I appreciate you coming on the show, and I hope everybody checks out Happy Rock and your other books.
Thank you very much.
All right. Talk to you later, Matt. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Okay, everybody. So next on the show, Brian Dawson is calling in from some mysterious location, I believe California. Brian, are you there?
Yes, sir.
How you doing tonight, all right?
Oh, yeah. Nice and hot here.
Yeah. Where are you calling? You're breaking up a little there. Did you say Livermore?
Yeah, Livermore, California.
What's it like there? Are you by the ocean? Are you in the middle of, are you more deserty, mountains?
We are the Tri-Valley. I actually live right next to the Lawrence Livermore Labs. It was part of the Manhattan Project.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
Now I guess
do stuff with lasers.
Okay, yeah, so it's like a laser facility, like Real Genius. That's probably like those guys, that's what they're doing there. Did you ever see that fine film?
Of course. Val Kilmer, can't miss it.
And they fill the whole house up with popcorn?
Yeah, that's pretty clever.
That's like last night I took my wife to a Yankees game, and they were giving us, like, free popcorn. It was, like, complimentary. And, yeah, you would think she was trying to fill up our whole apartment with popcorn the way she was going. You're like, I'm reading here that you're a San Francisco Giants fan.
Yes.
Have you been, been to any games lately?
No. My wife took me to a game last year. I have a hard time with crowds, and it was pretty overwhelming for me, so I don't think I'll be going back in the near future.
That's all right. It's, I don't think you're missing much. You know, I was at a game last night, and I was like, more of like a football. I'd rather go see a football game, but I always want to go when it's like snowing and cold out and shit. It's horrible.
Yeah. The problem with football games are just so, there's so few of them, they're so expensive.
Yeah, that's it. So, yeah, man, you're just coming back from the Beast Crawl, right? Which was...
Yeah.
I've heard some great things about it.
Yeah, we were only a half hour away, so we didn't have too far to come back.
For everybody listening, will you kind of, like, give an overview of what the last few days was like and explain what the Beast Crawl was so they know what we're talking about?
Yeah, so Beast Crawl is... I mean, I describe to people is it's kind of like a bar crawl, but instead of going to a bar, you go and see people read at different venues. And it was really awesome. I mean, a lot of walking, which I'm not really the biggest fan of, to get to venue. But I met a lot of really awesome people there, and everyone was really supportive, and you know, it's the first time I've read in a really long time, so it was quite the experience.
Yeah. It was like a three-day event, right? It was like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah.
We started out in Oakland, and then all the way up to San Francisco, right?
No, San Francisco has its own. I think it's called Lickquake or something. This was all in Oakland.
Oh, okay.
We only went for... Saturday, which was the main day.
Oh, sweet. So, actually, I was reading, I've been reading some of your, I think it's a chapter, it's called The War on Unicorns, and I've really been digging it. I'm looking forward to seeing that pop up at a place in the future. Could you describe a little bit about like what you were thinking when you're writing The War of Unicorns?
Well, it took me a really long time. I'm a bit of a perfectionist. My wife says I edit everything down to its skeleton, but it started really. I hadn't been writing for a while. And a friend of mine, who was a really old friend of mine, told me that I was the greatest waste of God-given potential she'd ever seen, and that kind of inspired me to do something. So I was...
That's nice.
Yeah, you know, everybody needs to kick me in the ass sometimes. But I was working at farmers markets at the time, and that's how it started. I would write these things. I was really into Ron Silman at the time and a lot of Paratacius and Greek stuff. And that's how it, you know, started. For me, The War on Unicorns is just kind of it's about, you know, being an adult and the things that we have to give up and the things that we have to deal with and stuff like that.
Yeah, so... putting away the childish things, right?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a battle because, you know, not all childish things are things that we should get rid of, which I think is part of the problem in the world is a lot of the things we get rid of are things that would actually make it a better place, you know, wonder and awe and whimsy and that kind of stuff we need more of. And, so I kind of wrote about it.
That's really cool because I was just, you know, that really brings up a kind of an interconnecting point to what our first caller was talking about, Matt. He likes to really write about outcasts, you know, strange weirdos. And I was thinking when he was saying that, how I mean, I couldn't imagine a story told about a person who isn't an outcast, who's just like totally accepted, a leader in the group, that I would enjoy. That I would, I don't think that's possible. Like that, you know, a story about the quarterback getting the girl. I don't think I'd ever want to read something like that. And I appreciate the weirdos. I appreciate the outcasts and this idea of this common idea of not losing touch with the cool shit, you know, the fun stuff.
Yeah. No, everyone should check out Matthew Simmons' book, Happy Rock. I read some of it last week, and are reviewing some excerpts, and then I found out that he was going to be on with tonight, and I was pretty stoked to listen to him. But there's a lot of really good writing. I really like his prose style, and he tells a really good story, which is important to me when I read fiction.
Yeah, damn straight. So back to your chapbook, War and Unicorns. Would you be willing to read any of this? Or are you to the point that you want to read any of them?
I was going to, but the problem with the War on Unicorns, the reason I don't want to read just one or two of them, is it's a smaller collection, and it's really meant to be read, you know, together.
Yeah, I understand.
Some of the pieces lose some of their value when you don't read what comes before it or after. So I did bring some other stuff that asked me to, but
I'd love to get some of that in a minute. But I wanted to touch slightly on like the style of writing, which I always find I want to talk a little bit about the style that the War of Unicorns is written in. These really beautiful, just little like slurps of text, you know. It's like almost like perfect little Twitter tweets. A few of them stuck together. These little tiny snapshots, and very, very, very intriguing. And it reminded me of the best kind of. I hate to give you any comparisons to song lyrics or anything, but almost like Talking Heads lyrics, you know. But not as non without the nonsense, you know. They're just these disembodied.
There's worse things to be compared to.
Yeah, I think it's that same style though that you can grab a phrase out of the air and it all works together as a poem. So I don't want to dwell on that too long. People can check that out when the book pops up.
Yeah, it doesn't have a home yet, so we're working on that.
Yeah, very cool, man. Very cool. But I am psyched if you have some other stuff you'd like to read, because I'm in the mood to hear some reading tonight. Do you have anything?
I brought a couple things. I wanted to start off with something a little lighter, a little more humorous. And I had written a bunch of these deer paragraphs. So they're like deer someone, and you'll see. Yeah. And I just write. And a lot of it was just stuff that I'd seen and you know, being on the BART and stuff like that. So the first one I'll read you is... called Dear Girl with the Blue Blazer Who is More Than Likely a Lesbian. The first time I saw you, I was reading John Marshall's Decision for McCullough v. Maryland, which asserted the dystonious supremacy of the federal government over the rebellious states. I saw you, and all I wanted to do was tell you how precious you were, how I'd like to read you closely, hide you in my pocket, away from the outside world, where no one can tell you where no one can tell you what you love is wrong, and if by case you're not a lesbian, I'd like to invite you to do something arbitrary like espressos or drinks in a dive bar. So that's that one. And I'll read one more of those. It's called Dear New Jetta Driver, Bay Bridge Tollgate, California, sometime in late August. I don't know what it is about you new car pig fuckers, but do you really think you own the road? the lane I would have let you into was a fast track lane, and I didn't see a fast track sticker, so I felt it was my civic duty to protect my fellow citizens from a habitual cum dumpster. I'm sorry if this is coming off as slightly harsh, but platinum gray is a weak substitute for gunmetal. Your Barracuda bike rack clashes with your 17-inch Vision V rims, and you look horrible in pink. I hope you get a parking ticket or a fender bender or a bumper sticker you quickly regret. That's that one.
That's great. I can understand the road rage. Horrible road rage. Yeah, you have really, really shitty driving where you live, right? I've been up that way.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I don't advise it to anyone, but my wife does it every day, the poor thing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I want to say, a quick story. It reminded me of your first poem, which I get a chance to put this little anecdote in there, but when you're reading this first poem about the girl you suspect, you know, you thought she could be a lesbian, or if she wasn't a lesbian, otherwise you'd like to take her for an espresso. It reminded me of this time I was sitting behind a girl with a pixie haircut, a short pixie haircut, and really, you know, nice haircut, very, very nice, cute girl, and she had a fucking big patch of her hair sticking up somehow, and I couldn't understand how all of it would be short, and there's just one flyaway, and I so bad wanted to just tell her, you know, I wanted to, like, excuse me, stranger, you know, your hair's sticking up. But I just couldn't bring myself to do it, so I just sat there. It's during a conference, so I'm at the whole conference, and just looking at this flyaway the whole time. And it's kind of reminding me of you.
I'm a little socially awkward. So I think that when I was younger, I used writing as a way to kind of bridge that gap with people, to build relationships. It was easier for me. It has always been easier for me to express, you know, actual feelings on paper than it has been to actually talk about them.
Yeah. So to actually forcing yourself to do these readings probably has been that, hasn't it? Like forcing yourself, right?
Well, the reading at Beast Crawl was the first one I've done in 13 years, so I don't do it very often, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm not a very big fan of readings. For a lot of reasons,
sure.
You know, one of them being there's a part of me that feels kind of awkward and odd letting people read some of my innermost thoughts. And then on top of that, I'm going to read it to you. And it's just kind of awkward. So, I think part of it comes from the fact that people view poetry as a biographical thing, and I always try to explain to people, especially within my own work, that, you know, the poems have a narrator, and to think that it's simply me is a bad assumption.
Yeah, well, that's a common problem, isn't it? You know, especially I can only imagine I'll pronounce this guy's name wrong for the rest of my life. Nabokai, I guess the guy who wrote Lolita. Like, what he must have gone through, you know, you write this whole first-person book about wanting to bang a 12-year-old girl, and then, so the rest of your life, people just assume that you're the best first-person narrator, or what, you know?
Yeah.
That's that age-old dilemma, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I think that when I was in college and studying writing, one of the things I really enjoyed doing the most was taking different people and writing from their point of view. I spent a lot of time writing from the point of view of women, which was something at that time, or something today, that is still difficult for me because I'm not a woman. So I tell you to write what you know. But it was important, and I thought it was good practice. You know, what I've done is I've published some things in women's magazine under fake names before. And,
oh, no shit.
Yeah. It was always something that really interested me, the idea of not only changing a style, but the voice that comes with it.
I love doing that same thing. I'm really impressed. he got something published under a fake name. Is that like a print thing or an online thing?
It was a print thing. I just created an email address and a fake bio. I mean, how else do you tell you? Is it the magazine?
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course, yeah.
And it was a lot easier, you know, 10 years ago because the Internet was so new. You know, I think a lot of the times now people, you know, if you submit somewhere, they might Google you or something like that and try to see who you are. So I don't know. It was easier then.
What was your article about? What was the women's issue article about? Do you remember?
It was... It's about abortion. When I was younger, you know, even today, to be honest, I've always liked to take topics that aren't are kind of the topics that we don't talk about. And talk about them. And I like to show these situations and these moments from perspectives that you're not used to. And that was one of them. Another time I wrote one. It's actually funny. About my little brother painting when he was little, and I used a fake name and a fake bio, and you know, so I've done that a couple times.
That sounds like a lot of fun. That really does. I think a lot of writers are just so wrapped up in, you know, their own, like they think every time they get something published, it helps their notoriety spread a little, and if you're writing under a pen name, maybe it's not helping your greater cause, you know. But I think that's really cool.
I don't know anyone who doesn't like, you know, get a tickle from getting published. It's nice, you know, for someone to like what you've done. It gives it validation. But I've always had a problem with reading people's bios, and there'll be like a list of magazines you've never fucking heard of. And the other one that I always laugh at is, you know, Pushcart nomination. It's like, Pushcart nominations are like, stickers that the doctors give away. Everyone has one.
Especially since, I'm not belittling, you know, the writers who are fucking around and doing their good thing, but I'll nominate you for Pushcart right now, Brian. Actually,
that's
I want
right.
to nominate you for your poem about the girl on the bus with the blue blazer. America, I want you guys all to vote for Brian's poem in the push cart. I don't even know how it would send your ballot in. Just write on a napkin, mail it to 181 Push Cart Lane, Push Cart New York, 100816. Okay.
Me and my friend Mike Gianlucci and I have done a little magazine called Slur for a really long time, and we've actually had people we published ask us to nominate them. I'm not going to use any names because they're, you know, you probably, they are, but they are literally, you know, asking to be nominated for a push cart. It's kind of ridiculous.
I think I would nominate most writers that I meet. If I met them in person, I will nominate most of them for a couple beers that I will buy them in a bar. And that's pretty much it. That's as far as it'll
get.
As far as our relationship, we will go. Maybe I'll look over someone's story and help them edit it if they need help or if they want help. Otherwise, that's it, man. I'll just nominate you for, maybe even a shot, a couple beers and a shot, you know.
I'm not trying to be a hater or anything. I just think that we caught up in some of these things that, a heterosexual male, the whole penis size thing. And that's what I think it becomes is, you know, look at how big my cock is. I've got 30 publications. And sometimes when I write bios, which I really hate doing, I think about just making magazines up, you know, and just cause who the fuck's going to know? There's thousands. It'd be kind of fun.
It would be fun. I think a lot of times bios are kind of strange, though. It's like this strange little limbo for people who haven't, they don't really have a lot to put it. They think they don't have other things to put it there. But everyone has a book they're shopping around, and bios are really for, you know, really what they're for is, you know, cover letters to agents and shit like that. And it's, I don't even know why fucking magazines even want a bio. I don't even know why they just Google me, you know.
My favorite bios are always they're more about the author and less about what the author does, and I always appreciate that, getting to you know, whether you like cats or you knit or you know, partake in a CSA at the farmer's market. I don't care what it is. I'm more interested in knowing who you are as opposed to where you published.
Yeah, that's some good advice right there, everybody listening. Take that advice, okay? I don't really care, especially, you know, when I'm reading a bio and it says, you know, you've been published in 1,200 magazines. You put that physical number.
Oh, 1,200.
Holy shit.
So I have a couple other things if you want me to read them. If not, we can chit-chat.
I would love for you to read some more stuff, man. I would love if you read me a few more poems, please.
All right. This one is called Page 7, Slopsism in Marriage. She didn't marry mere man but a serf, someone to rake the bad moments in piles and rise with the cock crowed coffee. Have you ever been blinded by butterflies, swarm of her eye and mouth around you, flickering on and off, offering leaf and leaf? A country besieged in bedsheets, her motherland exposed, a battleground, convincing me she is Stalingrad, fight for me. What will become of me when I can no longer turn her on? That's that one. And I got one more, it's a little more prosy, and I'll read it real quick. It's called In Bonton, Los Angeles.
Cool.
I hate Los Angeles. It's not my cup of tea. But, all right. In Bonton, Los Angeles, with its errant drive for success, anyone can become a stereotype or be caught with one on a street corner or in a Porsche. I count BMWs to pass time on the stoop. I count hybrid suburban utility vehicles with Greenpeace stickers. I watch the people on the bus, watch the people in the cars. There are so many reasons to wish. The other day, I saw two young lovers kissing at the bus stop. Everyone who drove by them watched. In all honesty, it was rather rude the way they pawed each other's genitals. To be liberal, I imagined them in a rabbit hole. Everything around them stuck, including themselves. They couldn't end that kiss if they tried. They are in love and don't have to obey the rules of time. From this very spot, I watch my neighborhood stir. It's amazing what you can learn when your eyes are open. I stroll along my neighborhood, wonder why people who settle in the city seek the comfort of concrete, why eyes never collide, why meals are never shared, why we never touch. Maybe people move to the big city to be closer to other humans and to feel the connection of a busy street, but to resist the intimacy of hello, how are you? Sometimes I think we weren't meant for these bills, jobs, needs, streets, walls, wants, and all these things have pitted us against each other in competition or fear and led us to booze, guns, needles, pills, powders, rooftops, roofs. Sometimes I just want to believe in something bigger than myself. That's that one.
Well, that was some really good shit, man. I'm really happy that you were able to come on and read some stuff tonight, you know.
I appreciate. I'm honored.
How do you feel about reading stuff on the air as opposed to reading it in live? Is it any less anxiety filled for you?
Oh, totally. It's, with no one around, I mean, I'm wearing flip flops and a pair of boxer shorts. You know, it's I'm just hanging out. I'm just hanging out and smoking cigarettes, and it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
I think part of the problem is I'm torn when I used to do readings when I was a much younger man. I was always torn between the idea of making eye contact with the audience and also, you know, eye contact with the page. Because I was never one to work on memorizing my pieces. So that was always hard for me. And the biggest thing is I don't know what to do with my hands when I'm reading.
Yeah.
So I start to get awkward. I start to think about what I'm doing with my hands instead of thinking about reading. So one of the things that helps me, which I did at Beast Crawl, is I just read now. I don't try to make eye contact with the audience.
Yeah, you just read. Straight up read.
Yeah, just get it over with. It's, you know, I have a lot of respect for people who are theatrical and have a really strong reading ability. They're comfortable, you know. It just seems natural, and I have a lot of respect for that. It's just that's just not the way I was built.
Well, I think sometimes, you know, at a reading, I could go either way. Not myself. I'm just saying, if I'm sitting in the audience, and sometimes if I'm in the mood for watching a performance, and if somebody has memorized something, that's good. And then other times, I'm just like, man, I wish this guy would just fucking read this poem, you know, not jump around the stage. I think it just depends on the mood and the crowd. I think reading off a page is perfectly fine. You don't need to make it. You always, sometimes people make it to a performance when they shouldn't even bother.
Yeah, I love watching good readers. I remember the first time when Dave Eggers wrote Heartbreaking Works, Standard Green Genius. It was really cool because not a lot of people knew about it at first, and you could go and have really intimate readings at small little bookstores. You know, this is, you know, 14 years ago. Currently, I have to, you know, totally admit that, you know, people think I'm biased, but I love watching my wife read. My wife's Jessica Dawson. She's incredibly talented and an amazing reader. She just makes it look so easy. And the only reason I read at B-Scroll was because she asked me to, and I wanted her to do it because I liked watching her read. So
that's great, man. That sounds like a really cool thing, you know, to actually enjoy what your wife does. I meet so many people that are just, you know, guys I work with especially, just like the way they talk, man, they sound like miserable fucks. Just like the sound of their wives' voices. And here you are, you're willing to go travel specifically to listen to your talk. That's great, man. I applaud you.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, having kids and commute and jobs, it puts a lot of strain on you, and it does make being married a something you have to work towards.
Sure.
My wife is incredibly supportive. She's my editor. You know, nothing sees the light of day without going through her. She's amazing, and at the same time, she's absolutely, you know, a thorn in my side because, you know, she's my wife now, and we live together, and we have two kids, and
sure.
I'm kind of absent-minded and lazy.
Yeah.
You know, so she has to take on that role, being, you know, the, hey, are you going to do these dishes? And, you know, sometimes you get a little angry and irritated. But I wouldn't trade her for the world.
Fucking A, man. That's great, you know. One last thing I'll applaud you for, and that's admitting the things that you suck at. I think the whole world can take a lesson in that. And, you know, I'm not even saying you really do suck at those specific things, but I'm tired. I'm tired of hearing people who talk like they do no wrong. That sucks.
No, the only thing that I could sit here and openly brag about, because I am a human being, I have my flaws and I make my mistakes, but I am a pretty damn good Call of Duty player. So I think that's the one place that maybe I might brag a little bit, but I agree with you. I respect a lot of people who, you know your limitations. It's self-awareness. It's, you know, understanding what you're good at, what you're not good at, and, you know, just owning it. And I just think that's kind of the only way you can get to acceptance is through ownership. So,
well, rock on, man. We're going to leave on that note. Leave on a positive note. I don't know how the fuck we did it. We're leaving on a positive note. Man, it was a huge pleasure having you come on. Thanks for reading. Thanks for being patient and hanging in there. Appreciate it. And hope you come back sometime.
I will do that. You have a great night.
You too, Brian. Take care. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks for listening. I want to thank our first guest, Matthew Simmons. And I'm ordering his book right now on the computer. I'm clicking the button as we speak. I suggest you do the same thing. Happy Rock, Dark Coast Press. And thanks to Brian Dawson. Great poet and real cool dude. Good night, everybody.